This is episode 27 of the Nothing Human podcast, the Lord's Prayer, part 3, Hallowed be your name.
I am a human being. Nothing human can be alien to me.
Welcome to the Nothing Human podcast. I'm Michael Minkoff, and I want to explore the big human questions in a way that makes complex ideas more accessible and practical for any and everyone. All I need from you is curiosity and attention. Join me on this journey of discovery, and I promise you'll see that there's really nothing about the big T truth we can't understand better together. All of the episodes for the Nothing Human podcast and my bonus podcast, Being Something Extra, are available on my website, nothinghumanpodcast.com. If you have any questions or feedback, please leave a comment on the relevant episode on my website, and I'll make sure to respond either there or in a podcast. If you want to support me in my work, and I'd really appreciate if you would, please rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you want to support me further, you can become my patron for as little as $5 a month on Patreon. I would love to be able to make the profession of my sole profession. I'm partway to that goal with your help, but I have a long way to go. Please visit the Patreon link in the show notes on my website to find out how you can help. And thank you for all your support. Speaking of Patreon, this series on the Lord's Prayer was requested by Patreon supporters who wanted to know more of my thoughts on the topic of the Lord's Prayer. So, for the next few episodes, while my editor and I continue to work on applying the changes to my book on truth, I'll be covering the Lord's Prayer section by section. I pray it's useful and edifying to you all. Now, let's go ahead and discuss this first petition of the prayer, Hallowed be your name. Whichever of the texts that you look at for this particular petition, which is the first petition of the Lord's Prayer, you'll see in Matthew 6, it says, Hallowed be your name. And if you look in Luke 11, you'll see it says, Hallowed be your name. So they are the same in both places, so there's not necessarily a whole lot to glean from any difference there. But in both places, the grammar for it is really weird, actually. And it's a little bit puzzling how it should be translated into English. And I will say, too, and we've already talked about this a little bit, but a lot of the translation into English of the Lord's Prayer is largely controlled or at least constrained by the familiarity of the English translations. I mean, even saying hallowed be your name rather than hallowed be thy name kind of trips up some people because they're so used to praying this prayer in the King James. So because of that and the familiarity of that, translators are oftentimes a little bit reluctant to make any major changes to their translational approach for this particular text. Which is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast series, was to give you some indication of what's going on behind the scenes and have a little bit more freedom to explore what those things mean, even though the language that's used to translate it is oftentimes really familiar to you. So, super weird grammar here on this particular petition. I'll tell you in Greek, and I'll just tell you what it is in Greek, and it may not mean anything to you, but I'll try to explain it. It's in aorist passive imperative. And this is a very strange grammatical construction. So like all the petitions in the Lord's Prayer, but one, there's one that isn't imperative. This one is imperative. And so it's framed in command language. It's a plea from an inferior, obviously, to a superior, but it has bold force. That imperative force of it is there, and it's there grammatically. So we'll talk in a later episode about the petition in the prayer that's not imperative, because you can't really see the difference in English in our normal translations. So I'm not going to spoil that here, but we will talk about that. But let's talk a little bit about what aorist means. So the first petition, Hallowed be your name, is aorist, which in Greek usually functions as the most simple and basic past tense. So the aorist generally refers to a completed past action without reference to any present continuation of that action. And usually imperatives employ either the aorist or the present tense. And the difference between those two is if you have the present imperative, it's an ongoing command. And if you have a present imperative, it might be something like, keep your uniform clean. And an aorist imperative might be, clean your uniform. So in the case of the present imperative, you can see that ongoing action is implied. In order to keep your uniform clean, you're going to have to keep cleaning it. But in the aorist imperative, the command is sort of a summary command, and it's not commanding an ongoing action, but requesting a single and summary result, that your uniform be cleaned. And so the petition here is not a present tense. It's in the aorist, so it's a summary command, not an ongoing command. Not keep your name hallowed, but complete that action and return the result, your name is holy. So all that said, hallowed be your name doesn't really convey the force of the Greek very well, in my opinion, because the translation kind of has a sense of present subjunctive in English. It basically seems to mean in English, let it be or may it be that your name be treated as holy. There's no tentative, hypothetical, or even ongoing sense in the Greek grammar of the prayer. It is, as we said, a summary command. So it's a request for a whole and single and completed result. Make it so your name is treated as fully holy. The idea is one of a finished, accomplished act, not an ongoing upkeep. So this may seem trivial to you, but it's really not. Because in some sense, it almost implies the idea of make it so your name could never be treated as anything other than holy and forever. Bring this to pass. Bring this process of making your name holy in the world to a close. And then the passive, so you have the aorist imperative, that's what we've talked about up to this point, but then you also have this added element of the grammar of passive tense or passive mood. And that adds another significant dimension to the petition, because a simple summary command could be, make your name holy. But God's name is already holy. He doesn't need to do that. Instead, the request is that his name be recognized or treated as holy, that it become fully holy, not only in its own essence as it already is, but in its reception and its identity on the earth or in creation. So God doesn't need, for instance, to treat his own name as holy. He already does that. So you're not going to ask that in a petition, and it's not necessary. So the petition really would be moot. It would be completely redundant if that's what it is asking, because it's already accomplished. It's already completed. So the petition actually implies that others still need to make or recognize God's name as holy in creation, like in the world. So really, we're asking God through his power and wisdom to make it so his name is manifested and recognized as holy by his creation and without any detractors, without anybody doing other than that. Meaning that this command would not be accomplished if even one blasphemy against or sullying of his name in word or deed remained in creation. So we'll return in a little bit to what making holy actually means. We're going to talk about that here in a second, because obviously it's an important part of the petition. But let's work from the end backward and discuss why the petition first refers to God's name rather than merely God himself. So you may not have actually thought about this, but the petition refers to the making of God's name as holy, not the making of God holy, or that we should treat him as holy, but that we should treat his name as holy. And it's kind of weird. You may not have even thought about the distinction there. But it is significant that the petition concerned God's name rather than himself. So Jesus could have told us, for instance, to pray, make it so you are treated as holy. But instead, we are to pray for God's name to be treated as holy or to become holy in creation. So how is God's name distinct from his being, actually? It is clear, especially in the Old Testament, that God identifies himself with his name, or at least that his name is God to us. One example of this is the language used to discuss his dwelling with the people of God. So sometimes biblical authors discuss God dwelling with his people, and at other times they discuss his name dwelling with his people. And this is oftentimes in the same context. So even in the same passage, sometimes you'll see his name dwelling, and sometimes you'll see that he is dwelling. One good example of both being talked about in the same text is in Deuteronomy 12, verses 5 through 12. So I'll read that here and just take note of the fact that there's a little bit of a sliding between God talking about his name dwelling with the people and then him dwelling with the people. So this is what it says. So Deuteronomy 12, verses 5 through 12 says this. But you shall seek Yahweh at the place which Yahweh your God will choose from all your tribes, to establish his name there for his dwelling. And there you shall come. There you shall bring your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the contribution of your hand, your votive offerings, your free will offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and of your flock. There also you and your households shall eat before Yahweh your God, and rejoice in all your undertakings in which Yahweh your God has blessed you. You shall not do at all what we are doing here today, every man doing whatever is right in his own eyes, for you have not as yet come to the resting place and the inheritance which Yahweh your God is giving you. When you cross the Jordan and live in the land which Yahweh your God is giving you to inherit, and he gives you rest from all your enemies around you so that you live in security, then it shall come about that the place in which Yahweh your God will choose for his name to dwell, there you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes and the contribution of your hand, and all your choice votive offerings which you will vow to the Lord. And you shall rejoice before Yahweh your God, you and your sons and your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who is within your gates, since he has no portion or inheritance with you. So you can see there that the name of God and God himself are kind of talked about similarly in that same context, where it's like, you're going to be dwelling with me, but also this place that is the temple is the place where I am dwelling, but it's also the place where my name is dwelling. And so you're going to be there with me, and you're going to be there with my name. And there's a little bit of a kind of sliding back and forth in this text and in other texts in the Old Testament, where it's unclear what distinction God is making between himself and his name. So one of the biggest distinctions between God himself and God, his name, is that the name of God, unlike God himself, is not infinite, transcendent, or unknowable. Indeed, the name of God is what of God we can know of him through his self-revelation. He reveals his name to us, and in a sense, the name of God is what we know of God. It's how we refer to him, and it's how he has chosen to reveal himself to us. It is all that we, as created beings, can know of him. His word, which is both with him and is him to us, his reputation and glory, which is the radiance of his will and character, and his love, which is his giving of himself in life to us and to creation. So God's name is truly God to us in all that he has revealed of himself to us. This is both his being as it is revealed to us, and it's also our recognition of and the words for who he is. So the name is, in a sense, the place where his revelation of himself and our understanding of him kind of meet. So in that sense, the name of God is deeply connected to his witness of himself, both to us and in us on earth. We have been called by his name. His name is on us. So in his name, both he himself is revealed, and at the same time, our identity in him is also preserved. So it's in his name, in a sense, where we meet him. It's in his name where his revelation and our recognition are unified. So in this sense, the holiness of God's name necessarily involves our holiness and the unmixedness of our witness and communion with him. So this petition necessarily involves both God and his people in full reconciliation and communion in all that we can share with him in his being. Now, you got to understand, we can't share everything of God's being. There are things about God that they say are incommunicable, meaning they cannot be communicated to us. We couldn't represent those things. Things like his absolute transcendence or infinitude or his omniscience or his omnipotence. We actually can't resemble or do those things. We can't be God in that sense. We can't be like God in that sense even. We're just growing in that direction, but we'll never actually be totally omniscient or totally omnipotent or totally transcendent. But there are qualities of God that you can see in the fruit of the Spirit, which are qualities of God, but also can be communicated to human beings, that human beings are able to have love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and etc. then they're able to have those in a godlike manner, meaning we can have God's love in us, God's joy in us, God's peace in us. So there are qualities or of the nature of God that we are actually able to exhibit and, in a sense, commune with God in those things. And that is actually the totality of those things would be the name of God. Because again, that is what he has revealed to us that we can understand. And it's also what he has placed on us that we can reflect back to him of his being, even as human beings, even though we're not, you know, gods or God. So anyway, we are not praying merely that God preserve his own holiness in the world, but also that we who bear his name would not profane it in any way in our witness of and communion with him, again, as he has revealed himself in and to us in his name. So this is made really clear in the Old Testament promises that this petition is rooted in. As I mentioned already in the introduction, and I've repeated this a couple of times, all the petitions of the Lord's Prayer are rooted in God's promises. Jesus would not have instructed us to command God, like in imperatives, even respectfully, concerning things that he had not promised himself to accomplish. So this first petition is rooted in significant Old Testament promises. The most significant promises concerning this occur in Ezekiel. So I'll read a lengthy but very relevant passage from Ezekiel 36, verses 16 through 32. So again, here's another long chunk of Old Testament text, but I think is really important for us to understand because I think that the petition is rooted specifically in this particular passage, and I think you'll find out why I think that as I read this passage. So here's Ezekiel 36, verses 16 through 32. Then the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of Adam, when the house of Israel was living in their own land, they defiled it by their ways and their deeds. Their way before me was like the uncleanness of a woman in her impurity. Therefore I poured out my wrath on them for the blood which they had shed on the land, because they had defiled it with their idols. Also I scattered them among the nations, and they were dispersed throughout the lands. According to their ways and their deeds, I judged them. When they came to the nations where they went, they profaned my holy name, because it was said of them, These are the people of Yahweh, yet they have come out of his land. But I had concern for my holy name, which the house of Israel had profaned among the nations wherever they went. Therefore say to the house of Israel, Thus says the Lord Yahweh, It is not for your sake, O house of Israel, that I am about to act, but for my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you went. I will vindicate the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations which you have profaned in their midst. Then the nations will know that I am Yahweh, declares the Lord Yahweh, when I prove myself holy among you in their sight. For I will take you from the nations, gather you from all the lands, and bring you into your own land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. Moreover, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances. You will live in the land that I gave to your forefathers, so you will be my people, and I will be your God. Moreover, I will save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the grain, and I will multiply it, and I will not bring a famine on you. I will multiply the fruit of the tree and the produce of the field so that you will not receive again the disgrace of famine among the nations. Then you will remember your evil ways and your deeds that were not good, and you will loathe yourselves in your own sight for your iniquities and your abominations. I am not doing this for your sake, declares the Lord Yahweh. Let it be known to you, be ashamed and confounded for your ways, O house of Israel. So we have to interpret that somewhat from the New Testament perspective and from the perspective of Jesus. But obviously, the Lord's Prayer is connected pretty deeply to that. You can see in his commitment to honor his name and to, in some sense, reverse the profanity that has occurred to his name, because his name was attached to these people and his promises to them have seemed to fail. Now, as it says in Hebrews, the promise to the people and even the promise of the law or the value of the law is not in itself faulty, but there was fault in the people, which caused it impossible, really, for God's name truly to dwell with them or on them without being profaned. And so that's why the last part of this talks about his commitment to their sanctification, to cleansing them, and to making both them and their land and their witness productive and holy, just as God is holy, so that his name could be on them without being profaned or defiled. So at this point, you're probably asking, you know, well, what does it mean for God's name to be holy? Like, what is this idea of hallowed? Because we don't really use that word very much. And, you know, like, I guess the only time you ever see it is like Halloween or whatever. You'll hear that idea of hallowed. Or if you say the Ten Commandments, you know, sometimes you'll say, you know, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Sometimes that's the King James version of that. So it's kind of an old word, which means to make holy and or to set apart as holy or to declare holy, right? That it really means make holy. And holy literally means set apart or recognized as set apart. And in this sense, holy can refer to something rare, something precious, something special, as contrasted to common or worthless. So in religious contexts, holy means set apart for a sacred purpose, and in that sense, unavailable for ordinary use. And there are lots of holy things, obviously, in the Old Testament and in the temple worship system, including, you know, the incense that was used in the temple was not allowed to be used for, quote, common purposes, meaning they weren't allowed to use the formula for that incense in the incense they used at home. It was only ever able to be used in the temple, and so it gave it a holy or set apart quality because they'd only smell that incense in that one particular place. So there are lots of things like that. There are instruments and utensils and clothing and other things like that set apart for sacred or holy uses that weren't allowed to be used commonly. And there's a lot of interesting trajectory built into that, because the holy place, obviously the holy of holies, is the most set apart place of God's presence. But you can see from the tabernacle to Solomon's temple to the second temple and then to the temple in Ezekiel, that's kind of the future temple, that the Holy of Holies continues to grow in size. And there's a promise that you can see in a lot of the Old Testament prophets that indicate that the sacredness that is located in the temple is going to grow and fill, so that the glory and the holiness of the temple eventually almost sacralizes or makes sacred all of the cosmos. There's this this word considering, you know, even the bells and the common instruments that are on the horses and on the cows will be called holy unto Yahweh. And so, and, you know, Yahweh being the name of God, so holy unto the name of God. And you can see that the name of God is, you know, spreading out as the people accomplish their mission. And so you see that trajectory also in Ezekiel, in that the kind of the beginning of that process is the making his people who bear his name holy, so that they are like him. And then from that, the witness of him and the knowledge of him will spread to the nations. And you can see that that is in the Great Commission as well. And there's a trajectory of that that's continuing to drive on throughout the New Testament, spreading out from Jerusalem to Samaria, to all Judea, and then to the rest of the world. That's the idea there for the spread of the gospel, which in a sense is the spread of the promise through which God will make creation holy again, even though it has been cursed and defiled by sin and fallenness. And so the beginning of that process is the holiness of God's name among his people, But eventually, as we see from it being a summary command, the idea is that his name would be holy in all of creation and that there would not even be one thing that would reject or deny that holiness in the future. So in Hebrew, the word for holy is kadosh, to make holy. That verb is kadosh. And we see it actually first in Genesis 2. So when God sets the seventh day apart as holy, and we've already talked about that in the King James, that he blessed the seventh Sabbath day or the seventh day and hallowed it or made it holy. The seventh day then is not like the other days since he did no work in it. And God's name also is said to be holy very frequently, and God's people are called to be holy as bearers of his name, as we've said. So God himself in many places promises to sanctify them for his name's sake, as we read in Ezekiel. I wanted to also bring up two more related passages from Leviticus. One is Leviticus 20, verse 7, where it says, "You shall consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am Yahweh your God. You shall keep my statutes and practice them. I am Yahweh who sanctifies you." And then in Leviticus 20, verse 26, it says, "Thus you are to be holy to me, for I, Yahweh, am holy, and I have set you apart from the peoples to be mine." So the Old Testament ties the holiness of God's name to the holiness of his people. And you can see that all over the place. You can also see that God himself promises to be the one who sanctifies or makes his people holy. And all of this actually makes a lot of sense based on what we know of God's name. His name is God, as he has revealed himself, and God, as he has called us in himself by placing his name in and on us. So God's name is both God to us, and God with us, and God in us. It's the place where God and humankind actually meet, as we said. So we cannot reach God on his own terms. I mean, this should be clear, but I just want to emphasize it here, that God has to reach us. We cannot reach to God. So the dwelling of his name with and in us is really, really important because that's how he has reached to us in a way that we can receive. And I don't think we meditate on this idea enough. We can't go to God, so he came to us in his name. His name is how he reveals himself to us. And since his name is holy, precious, rare, undefiled, set apart, protected, and preserved, so his people also will be. We will cause his name to be made holy in ourselves and in creation. This, as we've said, is the sure trajectory of the Christian's individual destiny, but it also connects to the trajectory of history, as we will see in the next petition, which connects pretty clearly to this one. But I hope this gives you some confidence and some inspiration while you're praying this prayer and this particular petition, that cling to the name of God and worship his holy name. And whatever sin and evil besets you, you can actually overcome it in the name of Jesus. You're praying toward this very reality when you pray the first petition of the Lord's Prayer. So believe it. Believe this petition, that God is not only making you a holy bearer of his name, but he is also making his name holy in creation and in some ways through your witness. And you are asking in this petition for him not just to make his name holy, but because of your connection to his name, you're asking him to make you and the church holy and blameless so that you can be a witness of the holiness of his name in the world so that others also would know and be able to commune with the holiness, the specialness, the set apartness of God. And God is making that so. So believe it when you pray this prayer. Believe that God is making it so. God's name, being holy, set apart, and blameless, should fill us with great comfort. God, listen, God would sooner deny himself than abandon his work of making his people holy. We're going to revisit a bit how this petition connects to the last petition, deliver us from wickedness, which sometimes is translated deliver us from evil. We're going to talk about that when we get there. But I hope you can already see how tightly interwoven and interconnected the Lord's Prayer is, and how each of these petitions sort of connects to the others. But we'll talk a lot more about that as we go. So now, for just one final note, I want to read 1 Thessalonians 5:23 and 24. Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely, and may your spirit and soul and body be preserved complete without blame at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. Faithful is he who calls you, and he also will bring it to pass. I hope you believe that, and that this has helped you a little bit to understand how central and how important this petition is. We oftentimes kind of skip over it, and I just wanted to take some time to really dig into both the gospel promises and the Old Testament promises that are connected to this petition, and really what it means fundamentally, and why it is worded the way it's worded. So I hope that's been edifying to you. On the next episode, we'll talk about the second petition of the Lord's Prayer, which is Your Kingdom Come. Now, if you have any comments or questions, remember to navigate over to my website, nothinghumanpodcast.com, and leave me a note on the relevant episode. And also, please remember that I do a live stream Q&A every other Wednesday on my YouTube channel, which is just at Nothing Human Podcast on YouTube. And the next one of those will be on Wednesday, February the 25th, 2026. So Wednesday, February the 25th, of 2026, 6:30 Eastern Time, I will do another live stream Q&A. There was a lot of good engagement on the last one, and I want to keep that momentum going. So if you would join me, and you can subscribe to my channel and you'll know when I'm live. It'll probably send you some kind of a email notification if you're signed up for that. But I would love it if you came, and if you have any questions, you can ask me there in the chat. Or you can just come and listen to other people's responses and interactions. But I'd love it if you came and attended that. Thank you all also so much for listening and for supporting me and my family in this work and for being patient with me. And I hope that this episode was worth the wait and that I'll be able to get you something else here real soon in the next couple of weeks. So until next time.
Nothing human can be alien to me.
Nothing human. Nothing.